in the old Plain Truth, or maybe one of the more modern magazines, that was based on Proverbs 6 and verse 6. You don't need to turn there today because my sermon doesn't revolve around Proverbs 6, verse 6, but I'll read it anyway. It says, go to the ant in Proverbs 6. You sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Which, having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. And there's a lesson that we learn from that. We look at that industrious little insect and how it works continuously through the good times and through the bad. Through plenty, even when there's plenty, they continue to work. And the lesson there is they store up for times that are not so prosperous, for times of need. Well, this afternoon we're not going to consider the ant, but we're going to consider the example of another insect. And as I said, you've probably heard sermonettes or sermons or even articles about the ant, but I'll bet you've never heard one about this one. Every spring, the fireflies come out. And I remember as a kid chasing them down. We called them lightning bugs in Cincinnati when I grew up. And we'd grab a jar and we'd run around and we'd see how many we could catch, I suppose, was the goal. Of course, you'd put them in a jar and you'd try to keep them alive because everything eats grass, right? You'd poke holes in the top of the jar. You soon learned after one or two times of doing that they're all dead the next morning. So catch them, see how many you can catch, and let them go. But we've all done that. Who hasn't chased fireflies and put them in a jar? Every little kid does that. There's something very special that occurs two places in the world, and one of them is in the Smoky Mountains. And it occurs every year. The synchronized fireflies. I wonder if you've ever heard of that. I know you're shaking your head, yes, but you were a park ranger. So Janice is cheating there. I've never saw them. I really would like to see them someday. It's such a popular event that they completely close the area. They close the road down. You can't drive there. You have to go onto the park's website and enter a lottery for even the chance to go and see. And if you're chosen, then they send you an email, I suppose, and you'll get a ticket for the shuttle because you can't drive there. You have to park somewhere. They shuttle you in. There are so many people that want to see it. And I think it's amazing that there are only two places in the world where this occurs. Somewhere in China, for some reason, and right there in the Smoky Mountains around the Elkmont Lodge. Now, the event has just passed this year. The event was from June 7th to June 14th of this past year. So you've missed your chance. I've missed my chance. But, you know, for those nights, the fireflies in those locations only, they flash, as any other firefly will do. But all of a sudden, they begin to flash in unison, and it lights up the entire sky. They tell me it's spectacular. And like I said, people from all over the country come to see this event. So why do fireflies flash anyway? What is it all about? What is the flashing all about? Well, I like to read this article, part of this article from the Hall's Shopper. That's a little newspaper in the little town that we live in Knoxville, called Hall's Crossroads. And this is by a man named Dr. Bob Collier, and the article is called Firefly Fever. And he explains what the flashing is all about. And I'll break in here. It says, the aforementioned Smoky Mountains synchronous fireflies get a lot of press with their forest-illuminated, exactly timed flashing of thousands of individual lights. And it's one of nature's unique events to see. But our local and ordinary fireflies are no slouches when it comes to having an interesting lifestyle. It turns out that those amazing little on and off flying light bulbs are out there flashing their lights with something more in mind than just enhancing our lovely summer evening experience. Those are the boy lightning bugs flying around. The girl lightning bugs are down on the ground, watching and waiting. And when a lovely unattached girl bug sees a flash that looks right to her, she flashes back. And the boy bug zooms down to introduce himself and establish a relationship. Now, there are many species of fireflies, and sometimes three or four are out on any given night. So how do you tell if you're courting the right species? Well, it's all in the timing of the flash. The length of time from the male's flash until the female responds with her flash is different for each species. So a single male of a certain species recognizes a single flash at just the right time interval from his, and then he heads down for a romantic rendezvous. It all sounds nice and summery and romantic, right? But alas, it says, everything in nature is far more complicated than usually meets the eye. And that holds true for the love life of the firefly. The two common firefly species involved in this drama have confusing but similar names. And these are their names: Photinus and Photurus. Think of the Photinus as the happy-go-lucky good guy and Photurus as the dark and evil one. So what happens on a lovely summer evening is that the Photinus guy goes flashing along and low, below a flashing signal of a female, and down he goes. Only it turns out to be a female, Photurus, who can give a Photinus signal if she chooses. And when the Photinus suitor arrives, bouquet in hand, the Photurus female pounces on him and devours him, leaving behind only a few scraps of legs and wings. What a revolting development. Being hungry is understandable, but why not just get some handy little morsel on the ground instead of the deception and the drama? Well, wouldn't you know that they've figured that out as well, the entomologists. Using some sophisticated science and a lot of lab time, they've unraveled the story. The Photinus firefly manufactures steroids from cholesterol molecules they get in their diet. These chemicals are toxic to other animals, and they help protect the Photinus firefly from predators, such as birds and spiders or lizards. Then he says people who own pet lizards mostly know not to feed fireflies to them. There have been a number of fatal outcomes. But just to show you how things are interrelated, the chemicals that the fireflies use for protection are similar in nature to the chemicals found in the milkweed plant that a monarch butterfly uses for their protection. The steroids that make up Photinus fireflies distasteful or poison, well, why don't the Photurus have those? They can't produce them. so they can't make them. And so down through the eons, instead of developing a system to produce their own poisons, Proteurus fireflies adapt a different and more dramatic way around the deficit. They eat two or three Photinus bugs and fill their system with the beneficial protective poison. So pretending to be a lovesick bug in order to lure a suitor to his grisly fate of being devoured for his toxic juices, well, that's a script that you would see in a Halloween movie. But the next time you're watching fireflies magically light up the summer dusk, continue to enjoy them for the amazing little creatures and lights that they are, but you may want to wish them luck in the choice that they make for a date that evening. So that's the answer of why a firefly lights up. It's deception. Deception is the name of the game. Just as that firefly, the Photinus, is deceived to his death by the flash of the Proteurus, we can be deceived if we're not very careful. So instead of considering the ant today, let's consider the example of that firefly. There's one that would like to deceive us as well. He has many names throughout the Bible. Let's turn to 1 Peter 5 for our first scripture of the day. Because he would like to devour us as well, as it says here in 1 Peter. 1 Peter 5, very familiar verse in verse 8. We're told that we need to be sober. We need to be diligent. Because your adversary, the devil, walks around like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. So there's one out there that would like to devour us as well, spiritually. Should we let our guard down? It says here, he's our adversary. What is an adversary? From the dictionary, an adversary or an antagonistic person is a person or a group contending against another. An adversary suggests an enemy who fights determinately, continuously, relentlessly. It's a good description. An antagonist suggests one who is hostile or has a hostile spirit, opposes another, often in a contest or a struggle. And we're in a contest, we're in a struggle throughout our daily lives. And we have that adversary who's working relentlessly and continuously to deceive us at every turn. Turn over to Matthew 13. In Matthew 13, Jesus is explaining this parable in verse 37 to his disciples. And I want to break in on verse 37. Matthew 13, verse 37, he answered and said to them, "He who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seeds are the sons of the kingdom, but the tares are the sons of the wicked one. The enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are the angels." So here, Satan's referred to as an enemy. An enemy is defined as someone who actively opposes or is hostile to someone or something, or a thing that harms or weakens someone else. Very interesting definition. Someone who will try to weaken or harm someone else. He does that daily. He attempts to do that at every turn. He's also known as the destroyer in several places throughout the scriptures. I won't turn back here. I just want to refer to two words that are in Revelation 9. There's two words, one Abaddon, one Apollyon. One is a Hebrew word, one's a Greek word, but they both mean the same thing, the destroyer. He's described as a destroyer, and he does destroy. Look at the number of ways that he's affected and destroyed. Turn over to 1 Corinthians 10. You know, Paul wrote this to them all these years ago, and it applies to us as well. And this is from the New Living Translation, 1 Corinthians 10. And let's pick it up at verse 6. He says, "These things happened as a warning to us, so that we would not crave evil things as they did, or worship idols, as some of them did. As the scripture said, the people celebrated with feasting and drinking, and they indulged in pagan revelry. We must not engage in sexual immorality, as some of them did, causing 23 of them to die in one day, 23,000 of them to die in one day. Nor shall we put Christ to the test." Interesting. We'll read a scripture later where Satan actually put Christ to the test. It's kind of interesting the way that this is translated in the New Living Translation, verse 9. "Nor should we put Christ to the test, as some of them did, and then died from snake bites." We have whole religions that do that. It's kind of interesting. Verse 10, "Don't grumble, as some of them did, and they were destroyed by the angel of death." You know, he's called the destroyer. He's called the angel of death. And he looks for ways to get in there. And in verse 10, apparently they were grumbling, and because of that they were destroyed. "These things happened to them as examples for us," verse 11 tells us. "They were written down to warn us who live at the end of the age." In verse 12, "If you think you're standing strong, be careful not to fall." Be careful not to fall. Verse 13. You know, we always think, we read back at these things, and we think, what a strange way that they responded. But verse 13. "The temptation in your life are no different from what others experience." Kind of interesting the way that's put. Nothing's new under the sun, as we've heard before. "The temptations in your life are no different from what others experience. And God is faithful. He will not allow the temptation to be more than you can stand. When you're tempted, he'll show you a way out so that you can endure." So he's the destroyer, the tempter, the angel of death. And verse 12 and 13 shows you that he's still at it. Let's turn over to Matthew 4 now. And we'll look at that story that I talked about where he tempts Christ. We read this a lot. This is often quoted. Let's pick it up in verse 3. Of course, you know the story. He's fasted for quite a while, 40 days. He's very hungry. And in verse 3, during that time, the devil came to him and said, If you're the Son of God, tell these stones to become loaves of bread. Now, he could have done that. Think about that for a second. What would have been the sin? I don't see a sin, even if he would have turned them into bread. What's the sin there? But he was tempting Christ. And then Jesus quoted a scripture and said in verse 4, People do not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. It was interesting. I don't know if you've ever looked up what he was quoting, but he was quoting Deuteronomy 8, verse 3 there. Jesus was. Actually, you'll see all of his quotes come from Deuteronomy. But then, Satan changes his tactics. He knows he's hungry, but that didn't work. So he tries quoting scripture. Then the devil took him up in verse 5 to the holy city, Jerusalem, to the highest point of the temple. And he said, If you're the Son of God, and I don't know if you remember how Mr. Armstrong used to read these, but he used to scream the word, if, that two-letter word. What a temptation. What do you mean, if? If you're the Son of God, jump off. This is from the New Living Translation. Jump off. For the scripture says, He'll order His angels to protect you, and they'll hold you up with their hands, and you wouldn't even hurt your foot against a stone. That's a quotation from the Bible. Satan quoted scripture. That's Psalm 91, 11 and 12. Write that down. Look it up. Pretty crafty. How can you argue with scripture? That's what it says. Pretty crafty. I guess he figured if you're going to quote scripture, I can quote scripture too. I can prove my point through the Bible. I think that's a good lesson for us today. You know, many people can and do quote scripture to prove their own point. You've probably heard it said, you can prove anything from the Bible. If you misapply scriptures, you probably can prove a lot of things. But this is misapplied. You need to take, as Mr. Armstrong again used to say, line upon line. Put things together. You can't just quote one scripture. The world's religions around us do that all the time. But he didn't let him get away with that. He said in verse 7, But the scripture also says, You must not test the Lord your God. And that's Deuteronomy 6, verse 16. So he quoted again. But he didn't give up yet in verse 8. We see that he took him to a peak of a very high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said in verse 9, I'll give all of this to you if you'll just kneel down and worship me. And Christ quotes Deuteronomy 6, verse 13, when he says, Get out of here, Satan. He says, The scripture says you must worship the Lord your God and serve only him. Three quotes from Deuteronomy. And then verse 11 says the devil went away and the angels came and took care of Jesus. Satan's a great tempter. Even tried to test Christ. So what chance do you have? Well, you do have a fairly good chance if you have the Spirit of God within you. But he misapplied those scriptures. Try to fool Christ. And you know, Satan doesn't come to us like that. He doesn't come directly to us. How many have seen Satan? You haven't seen him. You felt him. You know he's there. But he doesn't tap you on the shoulder and tell you, hey, give me 20 minutes of your time so I can ruin your life. He doesn't do that. He doesn't do that. But he tempts us nevertheless. You know, he has other characteristics that we all know. Not only does he deceive, well, let's turn over to John 8. Now, this story in John 8, Jesus is talking to the Pharisees. John 8. And I want to pick it up in verse 43. So John 8, verse 43. He says, why can't you understand what I'm saying? Again, this is the New Living Translation. It's because you can't hear me. You're the children of your father, the devil, and you love to do the evil things that he does. He was a murderer from the beginning. He always hated the truth because there's no truth in him. When he lies, it's consistent with his character, for he is a liar and he's the father of lies. Consistent with his character. That's very interesting to me. And he's described in many places as a liar. That's one of his main deceptive tools. Put a bug in you here that's not exactly true. Maybe partially true, but not exactly true. Just bend the truth just a little bit to get you to think. Then just like Photurus, you zoomed down in on that, and you're devoured. And it's too late. There are many other descriptions in the Bible of how he deceives. Many, many that even a sermon, I couldn't hit them all. He's known by a lot of other names. Here's a short list if you want to write these down and look later. He's known as Beelzebub, the god of flies. That's interesting. In Matthew 12, verse 24. Belial, wickedness, in 2 Corinthians 6. Of course, he's known as the wicked one, 1 John 2, verse 13. This one is particularly disturbing. He's known as the accuser of the brethren. In Revelation 12, verse 10. Very disturbing. It's caused a lot of division. Separation is one of his main tactics. The accuser of the brethren. He's known as a murderer in John 8, verse 44. Revelation 20 and Revelation 12. And all the way back to the beginning, from beginning to end, he's known as a serpent in the very first few chapters of Genesis, all the way to Revelation 20. He is the angel of the bottomless pit in Revelation 9. He's an evil spirit. He's an unclean spirit in both Acts 19 and Luke 11. A lot of names for this character. He is called the spirit that works disobedience in Ephesians 2, verse 2. Think about that. The spirit who works disobedience. He's known as the great red dragon in Revelation 12. Of course, we saw 1 Peter 5. He's a roaring lion looking how to devour. Ephesians 6, verse 12 calls him the ruler of darkness. And darkness is the opposite of light. He's known as the power of darkness in Colossians 1, 13. And you know, you put all these together, it makes a good study. It makes a very good study. Because you can see the vast number of ways he can deceive and how deception is brought to you. It's all about deception. Turn over to Revelation 12. It's all about deception, and he's done a great job. Not that it's a good thing, but he did good deceiving. He did a good job at it. Revelation 12. Well, in verse 9, he tells us he's deceived the whole world. You know, people read that, they don't believe that. But that's what it says here in verse 9. Let's start in verse 7. It says, there was a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon and his angels. Two types of angels. The dragon lost the battle and his angels were forced out of heaven. And in verse 9 tells us, this great dragon, the ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, is the one deceiving the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth with his angels. So that's interesting. Deceive the whole world. He's pretty successful at it. He's been pretty successful at deceiving many of us as well. He has a lot of devices that he uses. Not only all these names of deceiving, but the devices that he uses are equally insidious. He uses false doctrines. He uses false prophets. We've seen that in our lifetime. How many that were among us are now gone and were deceived? You know, when you hear a new idea, you hear a new doctrine, I hope your guard goes up. That's one of his devices. Oh, that's a great idea. It's very divisive. Many have been deceived by these things. There's several in that used to be with us in the Church of God that now believe they're prophets. There's one guy who every single year, well, not every single year, every two or three years, he makes a prediction that Christ is going to return at Pentecost and take everybody to the wedding supper. And we're deceived by that. Some are. He's got followers. To me, that sounds like a rapture theory, but it's a private interpretation. And every year, when it doesn't happen, he has an excuse of why it didn't happen. And his followers continue to follow him. It's amazing. Somehow he still has those who follow him. We have another that used to be among us in the greater Church of God, I would say, who believes he's a prophet. He was anointed for healing, And he took that to be as anointed for to be a prophet. And he's got a following. He's got his own church. I don't know. How can people be talked into such things? It's easy. It's really easy. Deception is there. Satan uses your feelings, your uncontrolled emotions. I did a sermon on that a year or so ago, maybe 2 years. You're easily manipulated by emotion. Easily. Your temper. Your uncontrolled temper. You ever in a really bad mood and you just really don't know why? And then something happens and you fly off the handle. I do that. I know where it comes from. And when I finally figure it out, you know, that happens. It happens. Through your thoughts, another device he uses. You're driving down the street with the radio off. I do this every day because I like to, I have a 45-minute drive to work, and I like to meditate on the way to work. Where did that weird thought come from? I think you know. Does that happen to you? It happens to me. You're thinking, wow, why am I thinking about this? Should be thinking about something else. And then I remember, again, what Mr. Armstrong used to say. He's the prince of the power of the air. And he broadcasts. And that part of our mind picks that broadcast up like a radio. Do you remember that? I hope you do. It's easy, very easy to get distracted these days. Another device is false accusations, false witnesses against brethren. This has happened many times. I could name some recent ones, but I won't. But be on guard for that. It's part of the deception. It throws you off the mark. But what did that scripture say? That's his character. He's a liar. He's the father of lies. And then it sets up one of his other devices, bitterness. Because you've been slighted. You've been overlooked. It's a characteristic of humans to remember that. We remember that. We were slighted. That person got credit for something that I did, maybe. And you let that eat at you. And you think about that. And you think about that. We need to learn to let those things go. It's hard to do. It is hard to do. Maybe we need to practice Matthew 18 a little bit more for conflict resolution. You know, nobody likes conflict. I don't want to come to you and say, hey, you did this and this. But that's what Matthew 18 says to do. Because if I don't, then I get bitter. I let it eat at me. Right? So do you. So you go to your brother. You talk to him. It's surprising to me how many people don't do that. It just builds up. Another device he uses is compromise. Compromise. Compromise and maybe a lack of faith. Very successful device. You know, you compromise on just a little thing. And it really bothers you the first time you do it. I'm never going to do that again. And then you do it again. And it still bothers you, but not quite as much. And then you do it again, and pretty soon it doesn't bother you at all. Your conscience is seared. That's not so bad. Just compromise a little bit. It's okay. But then the next thing is bigger and worse. And it bothers you until you do it over again and again and again. And you compromise again. You know, that's just a few ways that he works and he deceives. There's many, many examples throughout the scriptures. There are a lot of means out there for deception, and we need to be on guard for those. Let's turn over to Matthew 10, and this will, for a final scripture of the day, Matthew 10. This is really interesting to think about when you read this. Because in verse 16 of Matthew 10, Jesus gives this advice to his disciples before he sends them out. He says in verse 16, "I send you out as a sheep in the midst of wolves." Now, why would he do that? That's interesting to think about. How long is a sheep has no offensive weapons? And maybe only a few defensive weapons. Kick at the wolf or use his hooves. How long is a sheep going to last in the midst of wolves? But he says, "Be wise as serpents, but harmless as doves." You know, we're out there in that world too. How long are we going to last among wolves if you're a sheep? But he says, be wise. Be as wise as that snake, but as harmless as a dove. You know, that Photinus firefly, all he wanted to do was find a mate. That's all. But the Photurus tricked him, deceived him, and led him to his death. Don't let that happen in your spiritual life. Watch for the ways that you can be deceived. There are many out there, and he uses them all. Remember the example of the firefly.